Sunset brought a sensuous stillness over the river, soon broken by a chorus of insect noises and nightbird calls. For a while, the surface of the Hooghly became a mirror of the gray-green disk of twilight sky, disturbed only by the leap of dusk-feeding fish and the wake of the laboring mantas. As true darkness fell, innumerable prairie gossamers, much paler than their forest cousins, but also of greater wingspan, luminescent shades the size of small children, danced in the vales and valleys of the gently rolling hills. By the time the constellations emerged and the meteor trails began scarring the night sky, a brilliant display this far from all man-made light, the lanterns had been lit and dinner set out on the aft deck. The Shrike pilgrims were subdued, as if still contemplating Colonel Kassad's grim and confusing tale. The consul had been drinking steadily since before midday, and now he felt the pleasant displacement from reality, from the pain of memory, which allowed him to get through each day and night. Now he asked, his voice as careful and unslurred as only a true alcoholic's can be, whose turn it was to tell a tale.
"Mine,"
said Martin Silenus. The poet also had been drinking steadily since early in the day. His voice was as carefully controlled as the consul's, but redness on his sharp cheeks and an almost manic brightness of eye gave the old poet away.
"At least I drew number 3.
He held up his slip of paper.
"If you still want to hear the fucking thing."
Brawn Lamia lifted her glass of wine, scowled, and set it down.
"Perhaps we should talk about what we have learned from the first 2 stories and how it might relate to our current situation."
"Not yet," said Colonel Kassad. "We don't have enough information."
"Let M. Silenus speak," said Saul Weintraub. "Then we can begin discussing what we have heard."
"I agree," said Lenar Hoyt. Het Mastin and the consul nodded.
"Agreed. I'll tell my story. Just let me finish my fucking glass of wine." The Poet's Tale, Hyperion Kantos. In the beginning was the word. Then came the fucking word processor. Then came the thought processor. Then came the death of literature, and so it goes. Francis Bacon once said, "There arises from a bad and unapt formation of words a wonderful obstruction to the mind." We have all contributed our wonderful obstructions to the mind, have we not? I, more than most. One of the 20th century's better forgotten writers, that is, better comma forgotten, once bon mot, "I love being a writer. It's the paperwork I can't stand." Get it? Well, amigos and amiguette, I love being a poet. It's the goddamn words I can't stand. Where to start? Start with Hyperion, perhaps. Fade in. Almost 2 standard centuries ago. Sad King Billy's 5 seed ships spin like gold dandelions above this all-too-familiar lapis sky. We land like conquistadors strutting to and fro. More than 2,000 visual artists and writers and sculptors and poets and artists and vid-makers and holly directors and composers and decomposers and God knows what all, supported by 5 times that many administrators and technicians and ecologists and supervisors and court chamberlains and professional ass-kissers, not to mention the family of royal asses themselves, supported in turn by 10 times that many androids willing to till the soil and stoke the reactors and raise the cities and lift that bale and tote that load. Hell, you get the idea. We landed on a world already seated by the poor buggers who'd gone indigene 2 centuries before, and were living hand to mouth and cudgel to brain wherever they could. Naturally, the noble descendants of these brave pioneers greeted us like gods, especially after a few of our security folk slagged a few of their more aggressive leaders. And naturally, we accepted their worship as our due, and put them to work next to our blueskins, plowing the South 40 and working to build our shining city on the hill. And it was a shining city on a hill. Seeing the ruins today can tell you nothing of the place. The desert has advanced in 3 centuries. The aqueducts from the mountains have fallen and shattered. The city itself is only bones. But in its day, the city of poets was fair indeed. A bit of Socrates' Athens with the intellectual excitement of Renaissance Venice, the artistic fervor of Paris in the days of the Impressionists, the true democracy of the first decade of Orbit City, and the unlimited future of Tau Ceti Center. But in the end, it was none of these things, of course. It was only Hrothgar's claustrophobic mead hall with the monster waiting in the darkness without. We had our Grendel, to be sure. We even had our Hrothgar, if one squints a bit at Sad King Billy's poor slouched profile. We lacked only our Geats, a great, broad-shouldered, small-brained Beowulf with his band of merry psychopaths. So lacking a hero, we settled into the role of victims, and composed our sonnets, and rehearsed our ballets, and unrolled our scrolls, while all the while, our thorn and steel Grendel served the knight with fear and harvested thigh bones and gristle. And this was when I, a satyr then, formed in flesh as mirror to my soul, came as close to completing my kantos, my life's work, as I have come in 5 sad centuries of stubborn continuance.